From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Next Tony Hatch Club.
Hello, this is welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live.
He can be funny.
With BFF Keon and Pleb Poets here today.
Oh. Well.
Yeah, go for it. You can go over there. That way we can get you in on this. Keon, how was your week?
It was a great week. It had days in it, and I, almost the whole week in it. It's really how great it was. And lots of people are alive behind us on the street. There's businesses in the world. How about you, Carr? How was your week? See how if it compares to mine.
I think in two words, caught up.
You got caught up?
Got caught up. Like, caught up with everything. Everything's in front of me now. Which is where you want to be at the end of the month.
Oh, okay. You've caught up with your work.
Yeah. So.
It's not like you caught a... What is it? What's the phrase? Like, you caught a crush? You caught a...
Oh, yeah. February 14th is coming up.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's coming up.
Hey,
Who's going to be your Valentine? Is that going to be Topher? You guys gonna...
Topher, how was your week?
It's been pretty good. I've been going down the cursor rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. EK brought that up on Stacker News. I don't think I have it, but what do you think about it?
My AI buddy, pair programming.
Oh,
having
yeah.
Having a good time this
Interesting.
Week.
Interesting.
Have you used the new like bug finding feature in it yet?
I have not, no.
I'm curious about that one because that one's like a new feature that I haven't used yet.
I'm a hardcore type maxi, so bugs don't really slip by me.
Yeah, right here.
Famous last words.
EK had how I use Claude and Cursor.
So. I'd be surprised if Cursor could find a bug that I couldn't find, but I don't know.
I think it's mostly to get it. You want it to find bugs that are like that are expensive for you to find, but that you can verify easily. It's kind of
yeah.
That's kind of what you're using it to do.
Because it can scan your code base so quickly.
Yeah. I find it saves quite a bit of time depending on what I'm
working
on.
So it's moved past like boilerplate stuff. Because I remember in the beginning you guys were saying a lot of this was just like boilerplate.
It's definitely getting much better at this process, but you do still have to prompt it. It's still not able to read your mind. Because that's like the expectation. That's like the ideal. Is that you don't even have to. Mm-hmm. Tell
so I found a secret unlock with Cursor.
Okay, what's the
that
secret?
That is code refactoring.
Oh,
Cursor makes you blazingly fast at code refactoring.
I don't trust it to refactor. I think that's like the one process I'll probably never let it fully do. I'll let it suggest avenues, but. I feel like the refactoring, that's like a sacred process a little bit for me. But I think other people are more oriented towards logical things. I prefer the organization aspect of code. I like that. That's like it's where I get a lot of pleasure from programming.
But say like you have a particular pattern throughout your code base and you want to change that pattern. You only have to change the pattern once. And then Cursor will know that you want to use that new pattern. And so anytime it comes across the old pattern, it'll automatically suggest to you the refactor that you made.
You do a lot of object-oriented programming?
No. This is like just using like lots of just pure functions.
Okay. So you have a different pattern of usage of functions. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I guess it depends on what you're doing. I've tried to use it to refactor a few times, and I just remember being sort of, like, offended by it. So it was, like, doing a lot of unnecessary stuff.
How dare you.
Yeah.
So when he's filtering it's right here, like, when EK's filtering that prompt right there, so it says the only change was replacing created at, what does he ask? Why is he filtering it out for, I guess?
Oh, I think he is...
And then he says, thank you.
Yeah.
And then
you got to be nice.
It says,
I never thank it.
I started thinking
fucking amateur.
Not using
your LM's going to wake up.
It is my digital slave.
Anyways, that's what I think about. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. Front page Bitcoin. We cover the top five stories on Stacker News. The front page of Bitcoin. Said that twice.
Heck.
Apparently, I found out this week it's not everybody's front page of Bitcoin. I was surprised.
Who's front? From who?
I don't know. I forget which stacker it was. He said, I think it was my front page.
Bitcoin. Oh, that was a real Bitcoin dog.
Oh.
Yeah, not very popular among canines.
Anyways, but yeah, check us out. Check us out on Spotify. We're on Spotify now. Full episodes on there now. And then check us out.
Yeah, we got YouTube. A Rogan. It's not as big as Rogan's deal, but it's pretty good.
Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell. Do all those things. And share with a buddy. And then give Wumble a zap every once in a while. He does all the behind-the-scenes stuff. Cool.
All right.
We're going to jump into the top five stories. We're going to start with number five. Number five is Phoenix wallet privacy trade-offs. This is from 02B58 Lightning Territory, January 26, 16 comments, 614 sats. Keon, what is this?
Yeah, so I thought this was pretty great because Phoenix is widely regarded as like the easiest to use self-custodial wallet, like the gold standard self-custodial experience. So maybe there's a trade-off for that, and apparently there is. So I thought this was a great question. Async comes in, actually, and they answer the question or the top comment in this thread. But basically, until Bolt 12 receives or a thing, Async knows everyone you're sending money to. It basically has the same privacy guarantees as a custodial service does when it's not using Bolt 12. Yeah. That appears, and I think in the case of receiving Bolt 12, because everything goes through their LSP, you also will have compromised privacy, not super compromised, because you can the ID that they're sending you, the Bitcoin, like the channel they're sending it over, is not super persistent, I guess, but still. That is the summary.
It's super easy to use, though. It's like really ridiculously easy to use, Phoenix. I think it's one of the best wallets. I mean, I love that one in Zeus, but I think those are the two best wallets. What do you think, Topher?
Yeah, Phoenix and Zeus, two best wallets by far.
I say running your own node and then connecting it to Zeus. That is my favorite mobile wallet.
Yeah, that works too. AlbiHub's great. And I think you can connect your Phoenix to, or not Phoenix, you can connect your Zeus to AlbiHub, right?
But you can't. I've never tried it.
No.
You can't?
I don't think so. Oh, you so connect it with
AlbiGo is meant to connect through AlbiHub.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I haven't used AlbiGo yet, but that
Yeah,
is
that's kind of like, that feels like exactly like Wallet of Satoshi in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it does look and feel like it. With Zeus, though, you get kind of node management that you probably don't get with AlbiGo, because AlbiGo is mostly a payment wrapper. You can receive to your node, you can send from your node, but you're not like managing your channels in AlbiGo.
Doesn't that look like Wallet of Satoshi?
It does. It looks better than Wallet of Satoshi. It looks like Wallet of Satoshi if they redesigned it, which they should have done a long time ago.
Well, everybody's using Wallet of Satoshi outside the U.S., so I was talking to somebody from
their node is huge. It's massive. They have like, I think, it's like tens of millions of dollars on it or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. Cool. So let's move on to the next top story. Next top story, number four, is Tether is back on Bitcoin, baby. Lightning Dominance is just starting. This is from Dickie Greenlead, 23 hours ago, Bitcoin Territory, 48 comments, 20K boost, 2,993 sats. Keon, what is Tether?
Yeah, so this has been like kind of all over the place on all socials, but I guess at the Plan B forum in El Salvador, Tether announced that they are going to start minting Tether on Bitcoin again, which I guess they originally did back in the day. But they're doing it now in conjunction or in partnership, I guess, with Lightning Labs, this Taproot Assets project, so that you'll be able to send stable coins over or Tether, USDT over Lightning. And some people are excited about it. I think most people are not. I mean, most people I interact with are largely not. There are benefits to this. I think we'll see more Bitcoin being deployed on Lightning, which means Lightning will probably get better. But then it has this other, perhaps not worth the trade of creating an incentive for the U.S. government to kind of pay a lot of attention to the Lightning Network. And right here at the top, Rare Passenger, OFAC, FATF. FATF is like it's sort of like a world government financial crimes think tank, and they like basically are guiding like policy of financial stuff around the world. With the regs are like, we basically align with all of the regulations all these like NATO countries do. And then what does that turn Phoenix into if people are receiving USD on the other side? There's a lot, and this is why I'm glad this was actually one of the top stories this week, because there's a lot of really interesting discussion. I don't think that would happen, because normally stackers wouldn't probably be interested in this and want to discuss it. But because this was a top story, a lot of them ended up sharing their point of view. Justin Shocknett in here has a really interesting take, where he's like, what does he say? He says what happened, what needs to happen is hyper-dollarization, where all other fiat currencies are killed by the dollar. And then only then will hyper-Bitcoinization happen. That's like kind of his path to hyper-Bitcoinization. He says hyper-dollarization needs to happen first, which I think is kind of interesting. But he also restates his point of view that all of these things are just kind of silly ways to get around money transmitter and other types of laws, and it should really just all be centralized and custodial, because it might as well be. And it's like, what does he call it? He says you're conning regulators. And so I suspect that's what he thinks is going on here. It's like, this is a bit of theater for regulators to make them think that Tether actually isn't in control. Anyway.
Topher, what's your thoughts on this?
I really do enjoy like Lightning Labs and the team that they have, the product that they've built. I think from a technical perspective, Taproot Assets is like really cool. I like a lot of the architectural changes that they made to LND to support Taproot Assets. I like that you can do some pretty cool meta protocol stuff on top of LND nodes now. It doesn't have to be Taproot Assets specifically, but you can do like other custom protocols as well. So I think that's cool. And I think Taproot Assets is cool, like the way that they're doing accounting with Merkle trees, like all the technical stuff that they introduce is really cool. That being said, Tether is like the worst example that you could use for Taproot Assets, because it kind of takes away all of the cool things that Taproot Assets would give you. So like Taproot Assets, what's cool about it is that you can have these two nodes on think of the Lightning Network as this graph, and you have two nodes on each edge of this graph, and they're running Taproot Assets. All the intermediary nodes can just be regular Lightning nodes. And so if you have a particular asset on one node, you can convert it into sats, send that sats over the Lightning Network to the other node, and then have that node convert it from sats back into that asset. And you can do that with the Lightning Network participating in that without it really knowing or caring what's happening. So in that way, you can sort of like use the existing Lightning Network to do Taproot Assets transactions. But the thing is that when you have these different assets, in order for you to convert them into sats, you have to agree on what's the exchange rate. And so that's something that kind of is like not really discussed. Like, who gets to dictate what the exchange rate is between a particular asset and its SAT equivalent. And what is that protocol like? Is that like two nodes that negotiate that? Is there some third-party oracle that's deciding what that exchange rate is? And, okay, so then that's one thing. And then you go, okay, well, even if you don't think about that oracle problem and that, like, what is the exchange rate, you kind of have this decentralized network where you can pass assets around in addition to sats. Well, but then you have this thing called Tether where they have their own centralized ledger where they keep track of all this stuff. So it doesn't even matter that you're keeping track of this on Taproot assets, because at the end of the day, all that matters is what is on their ledger as Tether, because they don't have to necessarily honor the Tether that you have in your wallet. So it's kind of like, I think Taproot assets, it's cool, but Tether is like the worst example, because it's really like, it doesn't matter that they're using Taproot assets. Like, what's the difference between using Tether on Taproot assets and using Tether on a Coinbase wallet? Like, from Tether's perspective, what's the difference?
Yeah, it is.
That's what I don't get.
Yeah, I think it's where Justin's point is valid, is that it is Tether is more or less operating as a bank, but they, to avoid banking regulations, they issue their coins on decentralized databases, or more, you know, in many cases before Bitcoin, quasi decentralized databases that they're synchronizing with their centralized database. So
at the end of the day, if you want to convert that Tether into U.S. dollars, you have to go through Tether, like, or you have to go through an exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
at some point,
you're going to hit that OFAC list. If there's an OFAC list and you're on it, you're going to hit it. Whether you're holding your Tether on Ethereum, whether you're holding your Tether on Taproot assets, it doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what's the point of having an asset that's so centrally controlled, like being sent across a decentralized network? Like, what's the point of that?
I think that's
where I don't understand this.
I think regulatory obfuscation is what Justin's point is that it's pretty much purely to con regulators. That's the phrase he likes to use. And what is the other point that he makes? So he said, I mean, he thinks we're in a completely new regime now where Tether can just do the centralized database thing and they don't have to worry about getting prosecuted. I don't think that's true, but I agree with him that the setup seems weird in general. It seems like a bit of a shell game.
Yeah.
But
so
I mean it makes sense that this is, you know, this is the biggest other coin by market cap other than Bitcoin, probably. Is that true? The stable coins, at least the usage is very high. So I think that's why Lightning Labs paired with them. It's hard to say
because Tether is on so many different chains. So, like, how do you know what the total market cap is?
Yeah, or how many is issued. This has been a question for a long time. Is, like, Tether actually doing their accounting, honestly? I think most people agree now they probably are. But, yeah, I think they probably have their own. Or maybe they don't disclose it. You might know better than I do.
I don't. I mean, if my naive way of doing that, if I cared, would be to like go, I'd have to look up all the different implementations of Tether on all the different chains and look at all those market caps and add it all up.
I see.
And then I wouldn't even be surprised if it ended up being greater than the market cap for Bitcoin. Because there is a lot of money in Tether. Like, it is like the most popular stable coin for USD. They've been around for a long time. They're like on almost every chain. So,
Carr, do you have thoughts on?
Oh, do I?
Taproot assets?
I don't know. I think I agree with. I'm not gonna say I think. I do agree with Topher about the Taproot assets. I think that's really cool. Hats off to the team for getting it over the goal line, all that kind of stuff. Because that's, I mean, we feel like we've been talking to them for what, like 2-3 years at this point. And so it's good to see that they finally got it over the goal line. So technically, I think it's pretty cool. But just more like the whole theater of it all, I would say, obviously, Tether's, you know, the they make the most money in Bitcoin. Like, let's be honest, right? Like, they're the giant behemoth that makes the most money in Bitcoin. And they fund a lot of things in a lot of different ways, or at least Bitfinex or however that is all fit together. But I would say just post-Bitcoin ETF, and I've been saying this for the entire time, is the proliferation of the USD across all countries and all, and it doesn't matter where, even El Salvador bent the knee. So I think the majority of where Bitcoin is going is going to be in the hands of the BlackRocks of the world, and that's what's happening here. And I don't think people are taking that seriously. Like, you're not going to be able to get Bitcoin anymore, and they're making sure of it because they want you using Tether. And I say this like they want you using Tether. I'm just saying that the people behind the scenes that are making sure all these moves happen are making sure that the proliferation of the U.S. dollar gets to every nook and cranny of the world, and that continues to happen on every chain, on everywhere. And I think this is just continuing to do that. And I think at some point, people will look back and be like, damn it, like, we had a really good thing here, and we didn't get enough Bitcoin. And so if we can get more people in Latin America to use Tether, we can get more people in other countries in Africa to use Tether, we can get... And I get the whole point that they need all that stuff, and I get that. Like, they need the money right away, and I get that. But the fact remains is that you won't be able to get Bitcoin. It's going to be a lot harder. And then I think... So that's kind of where I see everything going. And then just the last piece I would add is, like, it's kind of game on between eCash and Tether at this point. Like, it's going to be really cool to see, like, what technical thing actually wins here. Is it going to be the eCash mint stuff, or is it going to be the Tether stuff? And this is this thing I've been saying for the longest time. Like, no one wants you to have Bitcoin. So I'm kind of more interested in that kind of fight. Like, what's going to happen, eCash or Tether? And I got my popcorn ready.
I think most people are... They think they're compatible. So, because
we'll see. I mean,
Tether on Lightning has all the same problems that that Bitcoin has on Lightning, and so that's kind of the.
I mean, I guess you could run a Tether mint inside of eCash, right? But like, yeah, that's, I mean, so that's why I'm interested to see how that plays out, because that's going to be the really cool thing. And then all the rugs will happen, and then all that collapse will happen. And that's where, like, I think Darthcoin says it here. It's just like, just stack Bitcoin, man. Like. Just stack Bitcoin. All this is just theater. I feel like I've been saying this for 2 years at this point. Like, it's
like putting on a costume. Like, you can.
Like, don't get me wrong. I'm super excited for Lightning Lab. Super excited for all the developers that got it done. It's amazing. Like, I think for as far as like Bitcoiners who are interested in getting more USD, this is going to be good for them, because now we'll start seeing more of the DeFi stuff enter the ecosystem. So for builders and stuff, you'll start seeing all that kind of. Those new markets get created, and I think that's going to be a whole new wave, and that'll lead to the price running up. So I think all that is going to happen later this year, and then I think at some point I'm interested to see what wins, eCash or Tether, and then where the government lands on. Does it land on, like, because at some point they're going to have to run a law. Is it going to be an eCash law, or is it going to be a Tether law? And that's going to be really interesting to watch. At some point,
I think the SEC, I think the new Secretary of Commerce was like a co-founder of Tether, and I think also used to be the CEO. That's so what I read. I think it was a Lola Leetz tweet that I read. Mm. I haven't like looked into it, but she's usually very specific with the facts that she surfaces. I really don't have much more to say about it, other than I'm not going to say any more about it. I think that'll be it.
Yeah. Earlier this week, I was asking Topher a really dumb pleb question. Was like, does this mean every wallet will have to KYC AML because LND can just flip a switch and then everybody's able to run Taro, therefore Tether's running through it? And I think you said no, right? That's not how that works.
Well, if they just enabled it by default, I don't know. I don't know how they would.
I guess that's a bit dev's question, I guess.
Well, I would, me personally, running an LND node, if they just suddenly enabled this so that now I have like this multi-asset wallet and I can receive assets, unsolicited to me, like, or yeah, then I would be upset, and I think a lot of people would be upset.
Well, that's what have they said anything about that
yet? I know, I don't think they're going
to
do that.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm kind of curious, and that's just more probably like
they know better than to do that. I found the numbers.
Oh, yep.
On Tether, so I was way off. This is according to Grok. So the total market cap of Tether across all its supported blockchains and networks is approximately $140 billion. That's the market cap. And then the total market cap of all USD stable coins is $217 billion. So it's still like off by an order of magnitude compared to Bitcoin.
Okay. Awesome.
I think in good news from El Salvador, look, Francisco was hanging out with Roy from Breeze.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Bambi. Cool. It's nice to see Roy.
That was in El Salvador, so.
I wonder if I've seen Roy around and I just don't.
Aww.
Really? Look at him.
Look at that shirt. I wonder who made that.
It's because he's from Guadalajara.
It's
because
he's wearing a print shop shirt.
All the boys look pretty.
Francisco looks so handsome in his shirt made by Pleb Print Shop, a.k.a. me.
Tell Wombo to add it in the show notes.
Wombo.
Is that
you got me?
John Gall t shirt?
It is. It's I'm surprised it's not Juan Gall.
I know, right? you think he would add that to there? Anyways, great conference. It looks like all sorts of news. You getting FOMO from that conference?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
You getting FOMO from that conference?
It is kind of funny. Like I like Marty and I like Odell, and I was watching them do a sit down chat with each other live from El Salvador, and it's just kind of funny watching them kind of shoot the shit while at the same time El Salvador Bitcoin's no longer legal tender, so I guess Bitcoin's been knocked down a peg in El Salvador.
Yeah, there was I don't think it hit Snacker News, but they got they passed the law, it was like 55-2 or something, where you no longer have to accept Bitcoin, or vendors don't have to accept Bitcoin anymore.
And we talked about that a few weeks ago.
But if they like tried to actually voted on it.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't realize. Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like that kind of took a little wind out of the sails of the conference. Have that news come in the same day.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly though, but it's like I get it. Like it, I think it was kind of crazy that the government just mandated that you had to accept Bitcoin and like force people to do it. I thought that was crazy. And if they're walking that back, I don't really think that's particularly a bad thing. As long as you're able to use Bitcoin to pay your tax obligations, I think that's what matters. And I don't know if that's still something that, whether or not, because when I look at like whether Bitcoin is legal tender, it's can you pay your tax obligations to the government? That's what makes it legal tender.
I think that's what it was effectively. That's how it was interpreted in El Salvador for the most part.
Oh, yeah, back in 21.
People have written a bunch of stories about.
Caitlin Long, I think.
Caitlin Long?
Was writing about that first, I believe.
I was going to say that a lot of people at Snacker News had written about trips that they went there and where people weren't accepting Bitcoin. And so it was never really, people weren't kicking down your door because you were selling scones for fiat and not Bitcoin or whatever. Yeah, papusas, there you go.
Cool. The number three top story, fake channels are real, client-side validated Lightning is easier than you think. It's from Peter Todd.
Yeah, so this is actually related to the last story because he's talking basically about these like virtual fake channels, which you can kind of think of Taproot assets as being where if you look and basically you have Alice, Bob, Charlie, and David, any of the hops in between there can be using any settlement system that they want, but regardless of what their other channel partners want. And so you're kind of free to create a fake Lightning channel. The one problem with that is that you can't publicly announce that channel yet, given that you can only publicly announce channels with proof that you have a UTXO. But I suspect that'll change, and he's kind of discussing that here. He uses RGB, which is very similar to Taproot assets. I think there are some differences, but he describes or he, I think he's proposing something slightly different than Taproot Assets, and he ends by wondering why Taproot Assets are designed the way they are, because as far as he can tell, you don't really need this asset universe construct that they have for light clients, because client-side validation should be pretty easy. Says it should only be like a few megabytes of data to prove like the provenance of a coin. And because it's, I guess because it's not Bitcoin, you don't really need a lot of other state. You don't really need a lot of other global state. And then I guess this is based on some of the work that he did on single proof seals. And this is a lot of stuff that I'm not familiar with, but, anyway, I always like things that Peter Todd, like the single proof seals, or what is it? Single use seals. The single use seals. He wrote that post like in 2017. You know, way ahead on a lot of this stuff. But yeah, maybe we'll see improvements like this at Taproot Assets. Maybe it already does this. I haven't looked deeply into the protocol, but I think there's a lot to do with client-side validation as the byline.
What do you think, Jeffrey? You got anything?
Well, I'm glad to see like more of this thought process out in the wild, because Bitcoin and Lightning are two different protocols, and they are interoperable, but they don't necessarily need to only operate with each other. Lightning can interoperate with any other kind of protocol. So it's cool to see Peter thinking about this and other people thinking about like how can you interweave Bitcoin with other things using Lightning as the gateway. And so, you know, that's kind of always been like the dream with Lightning, because Lightning was first implemented on Litecoin, I believe. And they, for the longest time, I think LND had a Litecoin implementation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you can use it as a bridge, and you can do all sorts of other cool protocols between Lightning nodes. Like as long as you're able to deliver that receipt, it doesn't really matter how you deliver it, as long as you're able to deliver it. So it's cool to see, you know, people thinking outside the box about like all the, because there's so much potential here, things you can do. I think people have been sleeping on like all the cool stuff you can do with Lightning. That's why every time I see people saying Lightning is dead and Lightning is like a old and busted technology on Twitter, it's like, man.
You're just
like,
jelly.
You guys don't even realize what you're missing here.
You're just jelly because it has a better logo.
Does Lightning have a better logo? What is the logo for the Lightning Network?
The lightning bolt.
Oh, you mean like you were talking like a platonic.
Better.
Ostrich is a funny.
Wow, animal. Those are fine words. The next top story, number two, right? Number two.
Yes.
What collateral to use on RoboSats? This is from Siggy4749 comments. 12,037 sats. Bitcoin beginner's territory. Keon.
Yeah, so I think by collateral here, Siggy is talking about like the other side of a trade. Like if you're buying Bitcoin, what asset are you using to buy Bitcoin on RoboSats with? And that's clarified in the comments. But yeah, a lot of people chime in on what they use. yeah, the guy
stable coins.
The guy at the top said he has old crypto that he is like getting rid of. I don't know, but that's
funny.
A lot of other stackers, a lot of stackers use RoboSats at this stage. I know EK says that he's seen when he's perusing. I don't know if he's actually used RoboSats, but I think he's actually admitted to using RoboSats. But he's seen other stackers basically on RoboSats and traded with other stackers on RoboSats, which is pretty fun. So lots of fans of RoboSats on Stacker News, and a lot of them use basically some form of fiat payment or gift card or something. And I think John Hoddle says in here that he only buys Bitcoin on RoboSats. He does not accept fiat through RoboSats because it's that's when your bank will flag the shit out of you, is when you're receiving dollars from like several unknown sources. They assume you're like a drug dealer or some such. Yeah. So that's a good pro tip.
Tover, you got anything on this?
I mean, I don't really use, when I do use RoboSats, it's like for Bitcoin. I didn't even know you could use other assets.
Well, no, you're acquiring Bitcoin.
You're acquiring.
What asset are you using to acquire Bitcoin?
I see.
And they have a variety of other assets that you can, assets being US dollar based assets.
I see. Yeah.
The number one top story this week, before we jump into that, I'm trying to get better at this.
At least you're not like actively protesting.
Check us out on Fountain. That's right.
Yeah, boost us or zap us, whatever they call it. They still call it boost on Fountain.
No, I think they called it
They switched to zap?
Yeah, I think so. I think zap. And before we check out
zap
this
one.
Week's zaps, hit that subscribe button. Tell a friend. I mean,
you got like a bedside manner or something.
I think I think they might enjoy
it's
the show.
It's kind of nice.
Now we added a recurring,
we should have a nighttime
recurring
podcast.
Guest like Topher and Club like Poet that. To the show. Like, I feel like the quality has upped its game.
That no one can see.
Well, they don't choose to want to be in here, but whenever they're ready, they can come over.
Why don't we do like a round table and we have a camera on a roof?
Oh, and we just goes like that?
Well, yeah, maybe it spins around based on who's talking.
Oh, that would be cool.
Or we could have some motion shit here.
It's like some Tom Green technology.
Dude, that was like the year 2000, bro.
I don't know if you follow with up with Timcast, but and I haven't recently, but at some point they upgraded their studio and they put in this like PTZ camera, and then you could click buttons and it would just like zoom in on each person, or you'd get the table shot.
Maybe we get
all these different shots they could play
with. When we get to the end of this bull run, we'll see.
I want a human being powered camera. That's what I've said.
Yeah, you've been saying that for 2 years.
That's right.
But yeah, if you have never seen this show, this is your first time checking it out, hit that subscribe button.
Get one of those like Fountain, Tesla YouTube. Dogs.
Everywhere. Tell a friend.
There's like robot dogs. Yeah.
The number one top story of the week is the true and accurate history of the boating accident meme. This is from, of course, Scorespace, like 3 weeks in a row. January 30th.
Powerful.
25 comments, 23,000 sets. Keon, what's Scorespace talking about this week?
Well, he's talking about the history of the boating accident meme. Most Bitcoiners know that it's a common, I guess, response to questions about what are you going to do when the IRS comes and asks about your Bitcoin, or what are you going to do about the Bitcoin you sold this year? And you say, I lost all of my Bitcoin in a boating accident, is the phrase. And so Scoresby, it's sort of like nice try fed. It's kind of how we use it. We don't have any Bitcoin. What are you talking about? We lost in a boating accident. Scoresby tries to uncover what the origin of it was, and he starts out in this post by going back through the Bitcoin Talk Forum, which was the first place people talked about Bitcoin, and discovers its usage there. I think it was in a thread where someone asked, how much Bitcoin do you all hold? And this was, I think, back in 2013. And that's, you know, the top tier of how much Bitcoin people had in U.S. dollars was like $15,000. But one someone in that thread replied, I lost it in a boating accident. The pictures Carr is showing are unrelated to what I'm talking about. He's reading the post for the first time. I'm just kidding. But
we're going to pause for a second.
All right.
So you're talking about the thing, but I'm trying to entertain the visual person who's watching this show live, because they'll see this. They'll see two old men talking about this. They'll be like, this is boring. I'm going to stop watching this.
I hear you.
Listeners, they're like, oh, Keon's grooving.
I just feel like
Keon's grooving. But for the people that are like watching this at home on their television
like,
sets, they're like,
I know. I just feel like
you think they just want to stare at this the whole time?
I just feel like I hadn't insulted you in this segment of the podcast.
Hey, there's a lot of stuff that you don't see that I do on the show. Come on.
Sorry. I always like Penn and Teller when they like.
Where are we at? We're like 160 episodes at this point. Come on.
That's right. I don't know why I question the magic.
Don't question the magic.
Don't look behind the curtain.
All right,
guys. All right.
Start all over. We got to start all over.
Definitely not starting all over. But I guess some people say, or then it predates even Bitcoin, the boating accident meme. It was actually a commonly used phrase with regard to gun ownership. Yeah. So if you had guns and people came for your guns, oh, I don't have any guns. I lost them in a boating accident. And
oh,
so,
that's so smart.
Yeah, and so that for a long time that has been used.
But what is this? Where do you get to the Titanic part?
The Titanic is related to the actual origin of the boating accident meme.
But stuff was actually lost.
It was.
Titanic. Yeah. But so much so, James Cameron did a whole expedition and a movie on it.
He did.
And he's still searching for the treasures of the Titanic.
Yeah, he's really into the ocean.
Some people think he's just down there for water stuff.
It's like no. Epstein's underground
some,
world.
There's probably some like bigger treasure that...
You think he's like, sexually attracted to octopuses or something?
No, I think there's probably like some bigger...
According to South Park, he's trying to raise the bar.
He's trying to raise the bar?
For what?
Raise the bar.
For what?
You have to see the episode.
Okay. Raise the bar for what? For treasure hunting? Or, oh, you mean for water? Scuba diving or whatever? What do they call it? Submersion?
They made it into a cultural thing.
Oh, okay.
To raise the bar on people.
Sorry, go for it, Keanu.
Okay. Well, the where the boating accident meme like originated was it was used to signal to someone adventure, and that you can get into a boating accident meaning that you can that life is still full of adventure. You can you can take big risks and possibly die.
Dude, I've been watching a lot of like I Barely Survived This. Dude, telling you, boating accidents. This is a real thing. Like, there's this lady that I saw. She, poor, bless her heart. Like, she literally saw all her friends die because they just, like, they got some, like, weird thing when you drink your own urine or something. And then they hopped off the boat, and then they got eaten by sharks. And she witnessed all of that. Dude, and then she almost died, and then there's just some freight liner that picked her up.
Sharks, like, really like urine? There was just,
No, but I'm saying,
like, a urine popsicle.
But I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. Like, boating accidents do happen. And it was just because they were sailing for fun. So I'm saying, man, it's treacherous out there in the ocean.
Yeah, but so I guess the first recorded usage of the boating accident meme, I think, was in
Titanic.
It was this guy. I think his name is William Shackley. He wrote
You're barely here. Gosh, that's
is Shackleton. Ernest Shackleton. Ernest Shackleton. He wrote, thank you.
I feel like we should just call. We should just call in Scoresby for this. Just be like, Scoresby, tell us what your
phone a friend. Yeah. But he wrote asking for people to help or to join his expedition. I think is going to the South Polar region, and he was tempting men who maybe felt like the modern world was a little safe with, you could get into a boating accident, and so it. It was like a phrase to signal to someone that they're really engaging in real life activity was the original kind of like impetus behind the meme.
The other thing, you ever see the Royal Tenenbaums? It's like he died saving his family from a boating accident.
I don't think I did. I don't think I could.
That's what I'm saying. I think the boating accident thing's been out there.
I was tired of Wes Anderson by that point, I think.
Now our like modern... version of this more as a plane crash. There's been plane crashes recently. And you know what's interesting about that? If you guys saw the helicopter crash into the commercial airplane and it
did.
It tragically affected the ice skating.
Yes. Killed ice skaters.
Which is a kind of a repeat, like back in the 60s, the same thing happened to that same ice skating group.
No way, really?
Yes.
I didn't hear about that.
So, watch out if you ice skate and you go in the sky.
You know what I heard about? You know what I heard about? Because I've been watching. So after I got through watching I Barely Survived This. There's another show called Planes, like near like what you're describing, like planes that almost like that don't make it or whatever. But apparently, every time there's a plane crash, it's actually like net positive. Is like they find out what the problem was and they fix it. So it's kind of like fighting a bug, and then it reduces future plane fatalities. Oh, helicopter! So they did one on Kobe Bryant, how he died his helicopter. And it was basically, it was just because of the, not the winds, but the, what do you call that?
The shape of the ground?
No, there's like a term that whenever a pilot thinks he's going up, but he's actually going down. I forget that term. I'm not a pilot, but maybe Ted knows. No, it's like a technical term. Anyway, but that happens though, where they don't know.
Based on their visuals.
Yeah,
and
their scope is telling them something different than what they're seeing, but they think they're going up. But in reality, they're actually going down. And then by the time they see that they're going down, it's too late. Anyways, it's all this stuff is very real.
It is.
I don't know how we got on this subject.
I think you were talking about your show. You've been selling your show. But we were just
great stuff. I like watching this.
Yeah, this is just the origin of the boating accident meme was a call to adventure, and then it got repurposed into like a plausible deniability thing is basically how it ended up. But yeah, it's interesting to learn that the boating accident, and it's also interesting for Bitcoin, because if a boating accident is possible with a Bitcoin, that means that you're in control of it yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the way Scoresby ties it all together.
So definitely plausible. It's Real Fake said, this belongs to Stacker.news best of. Is there a best of territory?
No.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's actually a really good idea.
Like oldies, we have, a regular current post.
Oh, okay, cool. And that's all the top stories this week. We're going to jump into our favorite stories of the week. First one was Keon's, the game theory of a strategic Bitcoin reserve. I didn't read this, but is this the one that Saifedean did?
No.
Okay.
This is by Mika Warren. Mika Warren wrote a book. I guess one of the chapters in the book, they go over a state actor getting involved in Bitcoin mining or in Bitcoin in general. I found it interesting. This was, I think I posted this over the weekend, but he goes into selfish mining and why and selfish mining is something that most Bitcoiners aren't aware of, but it's a mining attack that doesn't even require 51% of the hash rate. It just requires 34% of it. You can basically monopoly mine, or you can be the sole producer of blocks with 34% of the hash rate.
Oh, so it was like what we were talking about last week then.
I don't know what you're...
Like there was a thing that you and... Which developer was looking into that last week?
Oh, 0x1 Bitcoiner. Yeah, sort of related. Anyway, so he extends the chapter that he did on some of these like mining game theory problems, and brings up what happens when the U.S. government gets involved, and they can put more resources into Bitcoin maybe than they're getting from it. They're not like economically constrained because they have a money printer, they have a military, and I found that interesting to consider, because I think most Bitcoiners would probably be seemingly at this point in time be completely in support of that, so long as the number go up on that. Mm-hmm. U.S. government coin, even though it defeat kind of the thing that made Bitcoin valuable to begin with, it would still make them rich. So anyway, it's just an interesting thing to think about, regardless of how you view the U.S. government's role in Bitcoin will play out.
Yeah, got my popcorn ready. The next one was CoinOS exploit. This is one that showed up on the security territory this week. But I thought it was weird because everybody, when you made the switch over from custodial to non-custodial, everybody was using CoinOS. And it looks like they got exploited. But did they get exploited on the Nostr Wallet Connect side? Or is it because, like, I don't understand that part. Is it kind of the similar thing that happened to Bitcoin Pleb Dev? They're redeeming something, or is it?
I was going to bring that up. It sounds like what Mr. Plebdev had to deal with.
Is that the same thing?
I don't know. I don't know, but no. It kind of looks like it, because I think it was same with him. Like you could, you could somehow sniff out like a URL that was meant for somebody else or guess a URL that's meant for somebody else. But I don't know the specifics of this exploit. I don't think it's something to do with like Nostr Wallet Connect on the protocol level, though.
No, I don't think it's related to Bitcoin Pub Dev stuff. It sounds like more of just like their you know, like normal authentication for their website to gain access to your account had a like an attack vector that was exploited where they were accessing other accounts through password reset, some password reset mechanism that wasn't properly secured. And so they gained access to those accounts, NWC strings, and then I think drained a couple of the accounts. They said about 80 of them. That happened to about 80 of them. You know, this is why when people were switching to CoinOS, we weren't telling people to switch to CoinOS, because these things tend to happen. And most of the people who are using these services aren't really thinking about it too much. I mean, although CoinOS is a great service, you know, aside, these things just happen.
What's a fix for it?
Hold your own Bitcoin.
So use like
run your own node.
Use run your own node. There you go. There you go, Stackers.
That's the hard fix, not the easy fix.
I haven't tried CoinOS. It's just not on my radar.
It's a Canadian company. And people don't, for some reason, people don't talk about it a lot, but it's basically Wallet of Satoshi.
Oh, it's custodial?
It's custodial. Mm. It's basically Wallet of Satoshi, except it runs as a PWA, run out of Canada.
But do we have the founder here, I guess?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, at least he's out there answering questions.
Yeah, he's very open, dude.
Cool. Yeah. Just update on that. And then the other one was Maple. So Maple came out this week with their AI for work and personal use, or private AI for work, I should say. But yeah, did you see this, Kian?
I did see it.
What do you think?
I mean, I was using the, I think, beta, maybe they called it an alpha. I think it's pretty great. I think one thing that's pretty bullish is that it seems like open source models are catching up with closed source models. So you can get the privacy benefits that something like Maple will offer you and the power that you might expect from OpenAI. And it seems like they'll probably be kind of cat and mouse pretty close. And there's really no beating that, especially if you're planning, if you don't want to run your own GPUs to have a huge, powerful model. This is as good as it gets in terms of privacy and power. So if you have like accounting questions or something that you don't want OpenAI and whoever they're working with to know stuff, this is probably what you want to use.
Yeah, it was a good week for the team. They actually came to Top Builder this week and they helped out the builders with all sorts of questions. Did a whole session. It was awesome. Tony joined too, which was kind of cool. But check it out. If you're interested, definitely hit up Mark's. And then I think the pricing is at $5.99 starter, $20 at pro. And so, yeah, I'm crazy. I really want to see this kind of play out the way I think it might. And Mark's is going to be at Startup Day here on March 13th. So he'll be on a panel talking about this. Cool. The next one was Jack. So Mr. Dorsey is going to create a fund to grant collection of Nostr clients and technologies. Kian, did you see this?
I did see this. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, the thing that I think most people are confused about is he already funded OpenSats, which sounds very similar, where they give grants. But I think the difference is here that he's making the decision on who to give the grants to. And then
Jack is?
That's what it sounds like. He's going to create an OpenSats-like entity is what it sounds like, and then he's going to give out grants where he's making the decision on who to give out grants to. And then it's also focused on a very specific vision for what he wants to see on Nostr rather than maybe more generic protocol-level things. And he says it's better than creating his own client. And
just spend money.
Yeah, I don't know in what sense he means better. Better for him. Or it has a better outcome.
I think he means better for the ecosystem.
I think he means that, but I'm not sure how you reason to that, actually. Yeah. You have someone like Jack who's a world-class builder, and he's acting like me not building is good. It just seems kind of odd, but
yeah, I think this is good news. I mean,
target for what? Do you think that's baked into the sentence though? That's what I mean. It's like I think this is more. That's what I'm wondering. Is like, is he saying that everyone should the things they want to see in the world, they should do it by making a fund and issuing grants for it? Is that what we're saying? Is this a new way to run a company?
Well, he's not making that
wrong. Well, that's what. Why does it work for Noster clients and not other things? I don't. Unfortunately, he doesn't return my phone calls. I send him flowers every.
I think this is good. I mean, like, we made the whole Noster
Valentine's Day.
Like, as a group inside of Plub Lab, we made the whole Noster Devs course, and it. I mean, to this day, people still buy it, and people still comment on it, and we did that entirely grassroots. So,
evergreen.
It would be good. I think the way forward is more education stuff like that. Kind of what Austin's doing, but he's only one man, and I think doing that more from a community perspective would actually make more sense. And that's just my two cents on it. Are you telling
Jack how to run his fun car?
No, I'm just giving him something to think about. Like, I think there's something to be said about giving communities
money.
No, access to somebody like Jack.
Money.
To help. He doesn't actually. It's the crazy thing, Keon, is no one really needs his money who's doing stuff in Bitcoin. They really just need him to retweet it on Noster.
They need his influence.
They need his influence on it. Dude, Jack has an open invitation to Plub Lab.
Let's go.
And the Commons.
I was going to apply for this grant whenever it comes out.
I'm bullish on this because I think this is something that could be interesting.
Definitely interesting.
The other thing is DeepSeek a game changer for AI? Did you see this?
I did see this.
What did you think?
About
just it in general. Did you believe
about DeepSeek or about this just post?
DeepSeek, the $5 million thing, the whole, like, it's weird. So weirdly, it showed up, like, on the New York Times. It showed up everywhere on Monday, Sunday evening. It was, like, all over Bloomberg. And I just thought that was really fascinating. It was, like, a well-coordinated thing. So maybe there's something else going on behind the scenes that attributed to that. But it almost felt like I told one of the guys here, I was like, it almost felt like somebody was trying to call the top of the whole AI boom. They're like, hey, that's enough. This is the top right here. And so they're trying to lower expectations.
It's like calling the top for Bitcoin. You're only going to get wrecked.
So I don't know. Maybe there's more too going on behind the scenes, but it was just kind of weird how all that flowed in Sunday evening, Monday night. I think it had over like a million downloads in the App Store. Almost immediately, it all happened at once, which is strange to me sometimes. But go ahead, Ken. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that potato is twice baked, ain't it?
It's always.
But I was paying a little more attention to what the research community thought of it.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Yeah, give us that. And rather than like the conspiracies around why it was released, why it was open source.
That's not a conspiracy. That's just looking at the data and talking about it.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm not saying conspiracies are real. I'm not saying they aren't. I just wasn't thinking about them. I didn't mean to disparage your twice baked potato. your Mr. Potato Hash. but there was some speculation that because they're a hedge fund and they released it because it tanked the NVIDIA stock price because it demonstrated that you didn't need so many GPUs to produce a reasoning model, which prior to this, I think the most comparable models were at least 10 times as expensive. People are trying to deconstruct why it was so cheap. I think Some are suggesting that they're hiding some of the training costs and the fact that they used earlier models.
I think it's a communistic attack on Bitcoin. I was going to say Bitcoin. I think it's a communistic attack.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
This is a loaded.
I couldn't help myself. Potato. It was like communism. It's the line.
I just thought, because thought it was some of the more interesting things to me, one of the most interesting things to me about this was that Quant produced the model, and it was just like sort of a side project. Suggests to me that maybe, because we've been, for like 20 years, people have been talking about the brain drain of Wall Street.
What is that right there? What does that mean?
It's a football car. They're talking about how China threw a football to the United States, and they're like,
Across the ocean, come play the Super Bowl with me. Oh, the Super Bowl's coming up.
Yeah, China Bowl.
What is that? What is he explaining here? Does anybody know?
So I watched this video, yeah. So what he's trying to explain is basically the difference in size that you need to go from like how big does your data set need to be in order to train a model that's like competent to compare to ChatGPT, like what ChatGPT has. And so like there was hopefully I can explain this without butchering it, but like previously there was a lot of problems with scaling the training for these models to where you couldn't really use synthetic data or data that's generated off of other data. So like you just had to have real data. And so like the arms race between all these different AI companies is how big of a data set can we collect so that we can use this massive data set to train the model. And so what he's showing is that, okay, what a lot of these larger companies were doing was they were amassing this massive data set, the 670 billion parameters. That's what he put down on the paper.
Oh, wow.
Because it all had to be authentic data. Like you couldn't inflate this data. You couldn't generate this data. It all had to be authentic data. And so it kind of priced out anybody being able to train their own models because you need to not only have access to this data, but then be able to build the infrastructure to train on this data. Because the larger the data set is, the more hardware you need to train on it. And so what he's demonstrating is that what DeepSeek does is that it found a novel way to actually create that synthetic data off of real data. So you could start with a smaller data set, inflate that to a larger data set. Or I don't even think you even need to do that. Like they found a...
Use reinforcement learning.
Yeah, you can use reinforcement learning, but you can use it using this thing called chain of thought, which is kind of like the unlock with DeepSeek is like using this chain of thought in order to help like the AI model so that it doesn't get stuck on the smaller data set, that it's able to actually, you can inflate that data set to a larger one and it's able to learn off of that. I think that's like my half-assed explanation.
No,
there.
That's great. That's what the Cyrus is built for.
Basically, they made it. They found some ways to make training these models more cost efficient, and that's awesome. And I think it's pretty great. But what I was going to say is I think what's cool to me is that the quants are switching over to AI now, because they're like some of the smartest people that we have in the world, and they've been working in Wall Street, which is probably not very like societally positive. On the whole, we're gonna get them to produce AI, which will be pretty cool.
Pied Piper.
I stopped watching that in like the second season. I found it kind of offensive.
Yeah, I am looking forward to like this trickling down to like the Llama C++ and the other like small projects where you can run your own model and train your own model.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to that because I've always wanted to kind of have my own model, but you know,
I think it'll definitely happen. I just think something I said in a comment here is like the limit of all this technology is basically a human. How much energy does it take to train a human brain? How much matter is required to sustain a human brain? So you can expect at least your AGI computer that you want, the model that you want to run, as being, you know, a very small device about the size of a human brain, at least, probably smaller.
Well, I mean, I was talking to Ted this week. He was telling me that he's running his own like AI model and for his thing that he's creating. So I think there was a comment here. I don't know who he was quoting, but he said, Jevons Paradox?
I forget what.
I don't remember what that means.
Oh.
He said, good observation. DeepSeek is easier to run on home PC, which may create demand for self-hosting, consequently, in VIA hardware.
Oh, Jevons Paradox is like you make something more efficient, and then people begin consuming it more, not less. So, like, the idea is... But NVIDIA had a huge stock sell-off. I think it was, like, the biggest stock sell-off ever in history because it's also, like, one of the highest stock prices ever. But he's like, but see Jevons' paradox where this efficiency gain isn't going to reduce the demand for NVIDIA GPUs. It's going to increase it because all it's going to lead to is more people creating AI models.
That's a great observation. Cool.
Yeah. The coolest thing to me with this was that, like, so chain of thought was, I think, an optimization that OpenAI was doing with their models.
Yeah, their O1.
But they never disclosed any of these optimizations that they were doing, so opposite of being OpenAI. But the team that was working on DeepSeek, they were able to figure out this chain of thought process. But what I thought was really cool was, I think this is kind of speculation, but on OpenAI side, when they were like training with chain of thought, because I think they sort of acknowledged that this is also like they were doing chain of thought, like DeepSeek actually published like the concept of chain of thought, and OpenAI was actually using this internally, but like OpenAI was using chain of thought in their training data. So they were basically with these training sets, you have a question and you have an answer, and then you have some sort of reward function or not reward function, but like it's a cost function. It's like a punishment. And you know, you want the AI to get the answer right. But what they were doing is they were implementing this like thought process in between. It's like, okay, it's not just here's a question, here's the answer. It's like, here's a question, here's a list of steps that you should follow to try and work out the answer, and then here's the answer. And so that's something I think OpenAI was doing. The problem with that is that increases the size of your training data because now it's not only just question and answer, but now there's all these intermediary steps that the AI has to run through. And so that costs more money because that's more computation that the AI has to go through. It's also a larger data set that you need. And so what the DeepSeek team figured out is that you actually don't need to include that chain of thought in the training data. You can sort of do it in a way where that chain of thought just emerges within the AI. And so the AI goes through this chain of thought process to be able to break down like the steps to answering a question before it attempts to answer the question. And it'll do that internally without you explicitly like declaring like this is the chain of thought that you need to come up with. Mm. And so that's part of the unlock with DeepSeek is that you can still do like the question and answer format, but you get this performance benefit of having that intermediary chain of thought step. And it's just like an emergent behavior in the AI. It's not something that you have to explicitly provide in the training data. And there's like and when I say emergent, like it is based upon a formula that they're using when they're running these models and doing the training and the inference. And so there's a bunch of different papers that are released about this, but there's one paper in particular called DeepSeek Math, where they go over the math behind this. And I would just encourage people to read that because there's actually like really cool stuff in there that I think is worth looking into. So yeah, that, and then like there's also like this, I don't even know how to reference it, but somebody's passing around this, GitHub gists.
Yeah.
It's like the single file where somebody implemented like the entire DeepSeek algorithm in like one file.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's surprisingly elegant. Like it's not as big as you think. And so I just think it's a really cool, not only is it an optimization, but it's an optimization that ended up turning out to be beautiful in a way. And it's like things like that that I really enjoy. So
nice. Heard it here first, yeah. Stackers. Second to last one, will Trump end the need for cowboy credits? This is from Siggy47. He posted this week, Keon. This is more meta.
Oh, is this already this week? Yeah. So we talked about that. Justin Shocknet and other people are thinking, well, Trump is a new guy, and he's got a new administration. He's got new people. He's ending the deep state. The deep state was against Bitcoin, people using their money freely, and the freedom to transact. But Trump won't be that person, and he's going to undo it all. And so that's the idea. It's like you can run a – you can – and so I think to some extent this is true. I think some of the choke point 2.0 stuff will end. I think some of the really like heinous selective prosecutions will end. But I don't suspect he's going to repeal – or we're going to see like some significant laws get repealed and these things aren't valid anymore. I don't think Trump ends the need for non-custodial Bitcoin. I don't think we're going to see more custodial Bitcoin usage again. I think we've got a taste of how hostile a government can be towards it, which is a good thing. And people have sought out non-custodial solutions or KYC identity custodial ones, which is maybe their decision.
Okay. Now let's get really darker. DARPA to launch pre-crime AML program. This is from Sigma 47. I don't know. This seems right up my alley. Department of Defense is planning to launch a new AML program that wants to stop money laundering before it happens. Look at that. Pre-crime. We're getting our own pre-crime. If you go back to episode 44, Stacker News Live, Carr called this.
Did you pull that up, Jamie, to find this?
Or you're like, I could use it up. I didn't. I just knew.
You knew where you mentioned
it. I was like, I remember talking about this.
Receipts.
We were so early. Anyway. Yeah. So let's get into the fun stuff. The fun stuff is excellent Pebble e-paper smartwatches making a comeback.
Wow.
Ooh, doggy. Look at this. Finally.
All the millennials. All
the Pebbles coming
all
back.
All the nerdy millennials rejoice.
Do you know what this is, Pleb Poet? Have you ever heard of a Pebble? This is when you were in grade school, but
it's like the original smartwatch.
This was amazing technology for us boomers. Yeah. It was a smartwatch before the Apple Watch. And then Apple came and started trying to
eat their lunch. Yeah. Became like a mom watch.
But they open sourced it. Because it originally got shipped in 2013. Did you get one of the Kickstarter ones, Keon?
I didn't even have one. I was trying to find friends in the past that I didn't have.
I didn't have the Kickstarter one, but I had the one right. Huh? Oh, they didn't. But it was cool. It connected to your phone, and then it worked really well. You could download apps, Tamagotchi, had all that kind of cool stuff. But it was great because you could also see text messaging and all that stuff. It was really good. But the founder ended up closing the company. I feel like we talked about Pebble before in the past, haven't we?
We have.
I think we have covered.
Because I pulled some lessons from the founder because it was a pretty spectacular failure. So it was a startup that created Pebble, but the reason why they ended was they began pursuing like a broad market strategy where they started, they're like, all right, we appeal to nerds. Nerds love us. So we have, you know, we're like 100% meeting their needs, but there's only so many nerds in the world. So let's build a smartwatch for moms and the nerds, or moms, dads, the nerds, and grandma. And mom, dads, the nerds, and babies. Why not do that? And the scope just continued to expand until they built something that no one wanted.
Then Fitbit bought them, and then Google bought Fitbit, and then that was the end of that. But now it's making a comeback. They're gonna
build a nerd watch again.
Yeah. This is us going backwards.
Heck yeah. You going to buy one, Jana? You going to get a Pebble?
I would probably get one. Never had much
use for a watch. Do you not like time? I know the time. I just know the sun. But that might mean you need a watch. That's like what they're for. It's for people like you.
There you go.
If I don't need it, then I don't need it.
Oh, you do fine without the time?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I see. You transcended time.
Without the time.
Yeah.
When I want to know what's up, I look at the sun. I'm trying. It didn't work out that well.
She got
my computer get stuck?
Bar.
Let me go back here. Oh, it did get stuck. Wild. That's never happened before. Anyways. Let's jump into. Did it really get stuck? It got stuck. That's crazy. I wonder if it's because of this.
Close that. Is it? Are we doing Hack Day today?
Yeah. Anyways, let's jump into. Oh, there it goes. It came back. Let's jump into the top Stankers of the week. Keon.
Uh-oh. Look at the top stackers.
Top stackers.
We have a Hider. We have Grey Ruby. We have Undisciplined. We have Elvis. We have Aardvark. Aardvark is a relatively new stacker. Simple stacker. Anyway, those are the top stackers. 0x Bitcoiner, all of them in there.
All of them in there. Let's jump into Top Cowboys, baby. Aww. With the sunset something. I don't remember that song. I saw that Y2K movie this week.
Have you ever seen that? I think I saw that one.
It was good.
Oh, I thought it was retarded. It had Limp Bizkit in it, though, right?
It was like so nostalgic seeing like the 90s stuff.
Yeah, it was very, like, it had a very specific audience.
Was I telling you that, like, it like, for somebody who grew up in the 90s, so amazing. It was, like, you're signed into AOL, you had AIM on, so you could chat with all your friends, and then you had, broadcast.com, so you could look up, like, NBA 30-second highlights of games and stuff.
Oh, wow. You and go then, back far with Mark
And then
Cuban.
You could go and, like, check out, like, Angel Fire and all that kind of stuff sites. No, this is like a family's computer, but our mom got us like a gateway. We had like a gateway computer. Anyways.
Heck yeah.
Also in that scene though, he was using a Mac, so he was probably like a rich kid. But yeah, he was using an iMac. And he had one of those translucent Macs, but he was burning a CD at the those same time. Cool. And he put in Y2K and I was like, oh dude, I remember doing that.
So '90s were great.
He was burning a CD.
That's right, they had CD burners.
Simpler time.
While also just browsing the web and, dude, gosh. Anyway,
lame.
Burn a mix CD and then you just like write on
dude,
it.
Dude, I used to make a lot Cars of mix CDs.
Give it to your girlfriend.
Dude, so many girlfriends with CDs. Gosh, that's great.
Anyways, wow.
Let's go for it, Kim.
Oh yeah.
I think Zoomers will like.
Yeah, what's the
Look
equivalent
back 30
of,
years from now? And like, oh man,
you make a TikTok playlist,
so
right?
They're like, oh, TikTok was great.
You got like a couple TikTok videos.
But we had
together.
Vine though. I feel like Vine was a thing.
Yeah, Vine was a rip Vine. Rest in peace.
What's a cool thing they got?
I think they're dating algorithms now. I don't think they date people anymore. I mean, like think about a great playlist for them. It's an algorithm. It's not.
Oh, so I guess they got Spotify. Spotify's pretty damn good though.
Yeah, I don't know, but I would, I mean, it seems like we're just replacing ourselves with computers and that's okay.
We're just going to be talking to computers. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much on X anyway. It's all like bots.
Seems like so. Bots. The world is full of bots. Dead internet theory. We're back to a few podcasts ago. We have Cowboys, in this segment, this really popular segment. We have all the usual Cowboys. I don't think anyone gained or really lost from what I can tell. Although it's hard to always tell if like one person dropped out, people are pretty consistent with it. So
yeah,
not pretty much cool. Change. EK might've lost his. So I haven't been seeing him on site.
I think that's it. That's all I got. I don't know. I just feel like I ran out of gas at the end.
Well, you went pretty hard. I think,
I think we had too many stories.
I think it was a lot of stuff.
I'll work on it next week. Cool. Ken, what are you doing this week?
What am I doing? I'm going to enjoy the days that are going to happen this weekend. I don't have anything specifically. I need to plan a vacation that I still haven't planned
yet. Yeah, you
still
need to plan that. You should go to Hawaii.
And I'll do it. You're for some reason big on Hawaii all of a sudden.
Plepo, what are you doing this weekend, Plepo?
I just want to comment to the vacation planning.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to tell you that I get to go on a vacation soon. I'm going to Utah.
Woo.
Woo.
Are you going with another pleblabian?
By myself.
Oh. What are you doing there?
I get to visit a couple people, which I refer to as the worms.
Okay. So these are like enemies.
No, I'm also a worm.
Oh. I didn't realize you were a worm, or you identified as a worm.
And I'm going to go visit the worms because we used to be together when I lived in Utah, and then I had to move away, but we've remained faithful.
You've been connected. Worms connected across time.
Yeah.
Probably. You don't really know. Or and space.
Through through the internet, and now we get to be worms IRL.
Just dig.
And
dig
just
in.
Dig. And dig. Okay.
Amazing. What are you doing, Carr? What are you doing this weekend?
We have a workshop tomorrow.
You should go to Hawaii.
Brandon Keys is doing a workshop.
That go to Hawaii for that workshop.
And then some work.
Like you'd like it.
Cool. Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Go out there and dig.
And worm around. Zap.